Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Ron and Don Show on Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Ron and Don Show on Blog Talk Radio. My name is Don Allen in Studio A, and today we have a special guest this morning because we're going to be talking education in Minnesota. Not Education Minnesota, the big union, but we're going to be talking about the role of education for our black and brown students in the Minneapolis, St. Paul, and the state of Minnesota. So hopefully you can join us. I'll have a special guest, Mr. Marvin Sims, coming in. As you know, currently it's pretty cold outside. It snowed all last night, and there are some weather advisories out there. So if you're driving around, I drove around this morning about 6:30 and slipped and slid everywhere, so I'm just going to probably stay in the house until they get all the roads, the side roads plowed. But other than that, it's a slippery morning out there, and be careful when you're out there and check on your neighbors that are out shoveling the snow. With that, I'd like to bring Mr. Marvin Sims on the air with us to have this conversation about education this morning. Mr. Sims, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, you've been following the what I like to call the conundrum between Justice Alan Page, the head of the Federal Reserve, but before we get into that, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? Let our listeners know who you are, your background, what you do in education, and why you're concerned about it for our black girls and boys. Go ahead, sir.
You know what? I started out my educational journey as a paraprofessional at 23 years old. I ended up working with a master teacher at the time, and I didn't even know it. Back then, they were dual diagnosis. So you could have EBD and LD, at primary at the same time. And this teacher taught me so much within the first 2 years. I thought everyone was teaching like he taught. He told me to go back to school and get my teacher's license. I got a degree in sociology. I ended up going back to St. Cloud State and I got my teacher's license. From then, I got my master's. I went to Hamline and got my administrative degree. And everything else is history. But I went from a para to a licensed teacher to now I'm in administration right now. So I've gone from – I've seen it all. I've seen it all in education.
Okay. Okay, so you've had a in-depth history with education and probably the best practices. What is your view on the current state of education? And for full disclosure, Mr. Sims and I are both educators, and I asked him this morning to call in and talk about this because this is a very important piece, and we're going to go ahead and get down with it and talk about it. But before we do that, I have a caller, Mr. Sims. Our phone lines are 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904, and I'd like to get the callers because they might have a relevant or pertinent question to this topic. Caller, you're live on the air, the Ron and Don Show with Marvin Sims. Caller, go ahead. 735, you're live on the air. Go ahead. Okay, they just want to listen. Okay, that's fine. You can listen in the queue. I will check on you every now and then. But getting back to the question, Marvin, what do you see happening in education in Minnesota? We'll go like that.
At this point right now, it is so – I'm going to be honest. Right now, if we don't address education for all kids, we're in trouble. say this, 1954, Brown versus Board of Education. We've been struggling ever since, ever since. And in Minnesota right now, the kids, the students of color, if we can't provide them with an education, the state of Minnesota, as far as how we run business, it's gonna fold. I don't know how we compete. I don't know. Half the kids in our state functionally illiterate. Half the kids in our state don't graduate. Half the kids in our state are struggling. And when I say that, I mean black and brown kids. So we have to deal with it.
Yeah, I'm actually calling up the state of Minnesota report card, and I'm looking at some items here. Let me see if I can get that pulled up here. I'm trying to pull up the St. Paul and Minneapolis school districts and the surrounding suburbs. What's happening here is it looks like that we are nowhere near having 70% of our students from all walks of life proficient in reading, math, and science. And, as you know, Mr. Sims, this has been going on for, almost 25, 20 years now or so. And
yeah,
I think it's a systemic cause. I mean, we both have our opinions about this. We have talked about this before, but for our listeners out there nationally and internationally, what do you think is the systemic reasoning or causal effects of this lack of education? What area should we be focusing on?
If anyone out there just Googles GDP and the achievement gap,
okay.
Our nation right now, just Google GDP achievement gap, we're talking about billions of dollars being wasted based on human capital, meaning that the kids and the people that need to be in jobs, that need to be productive, contributing citizens right now, they're not there. Google GDP achievement gap. It'll blow your mind. Matter of fact, Google it right now. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I did. Let me read it. It says, the educational gap imposes on the United States the economic equivalent of a permanent national recession. $310 billion and $525 billion higher are 2 to 4% of the GPD, or GDP.
There you go.
So
what are we talking about, Don? I mean, right there.
Yeah.
What are we talking about?
When this is not –
Go ahead.
Yeah. Go ahead. I'm just looking at this.
Go ahead.
Are crazy. Yeah.
So America, the cure for cancer might be in one of those brown kids. It might be. Right? So we're talking about really problem solving and changing lives. It might be walking out your door every day, and we don't even know it. So when we don't give these kids, all kids, black, brown, white, all kids, right, an equal education, meaning that, and I just got to say this, Don, we're not talking about sit and get. I'm talking about trying to pull out the genius in every kid. That's different. So I just got to say this. Schooling and education is different. So schooling is you come in poor, you leave poor. education is about transforming lives. And right now, we have a process of schooling. These kids are in a true caste system, meaning you come in poor, again, you leave poor. We need to start educating kids so they come in poor, right? They don't leave poor.
Let's get down and dirty with this, because we're going to have to get down and dirty. We know in Minnesota, St. Paul and Minneapolis, there's a battle. According to this, you just told me to Google the economic cost of the U.S. education gap, and I did that, and I'm looking at the McKinsey report. Who has detailed, a very detailed with exhibits of why this is going to implode on ourselves here in the Twin Cities in less than 3 years. So getting down and dirty with it, I'm frustrated as a teacher. You already know that. We talked about this. But how do we get people, especially the parents out there who get in, some of them are very intimidated by acronyms, 504, IEP, a SCIP program. And for the journeymen and the common folks out there that really have not read the Minnesota statutes, 119, 120, et cetera, that deal with the education code, how do we get them to the point where they, you know, how do we get the people to pay attention? And we can use this platform today to really talk about that, because folks aren't paying attention. You know that, and I know that. How do we get to that point? And what would be some of your suggestions? Mr. Sims.
The next generation.
Yeah.
And the generation after that. And the generation after that, all hinges on what we do today. I stand on the shoulders of the folks who came before me. So I just want, there's too many names, Don. There's too many names. I do want to say that it's being done. We think the world thinks that we're black and brown cannot. I don't know. I might just throwing it out there. I don't even want to put that out there. I'll just say this. About 4 years ago, I went to Crown Heights, Brooklyn, Medgar Evers High School, and it was a 90% students of color. 90% students on free and reduced lunch, but all of the kids, and I saw the graduation pamphlet, all the kids went to a four-year school, public school, special ed, all the kids. So next to the name of the kid was the university that they were going to, Lehigh, NYU, Penn State. You name it. I talked with the kids.
And these are black kids, right?
Black kids. I talked with them. What's going on? What are you guys doing? And they looked at me like I was crazy. Like, wait, why are you asking me these questions? They had it in, this is what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to be great. Don, on that trip home from New York to Minnesota, I broke down crying. And I broke down crying because what the heck are we doing in Minnesota? I'm over here talking to these young kids. I'm going to Yale. I'm going to Harvard. Why are you asking me these questions? As a matter of fact, they asked me, what did I do? And I told them in my position in Minnesota, the kids like them, half of them wouldn't make it. And they looked at me like I was crazy. I say that because there are schools, Urban Prep Chicago, they're doing it. Capital Prep out in Connecticut, they're doing it. When are we in Minnesota going to figure out that it's not the kids? The kids were never the problem. It's the adults. And the, so when?
You're right.
When? When?
Yeah.
I just want to say this, and then hopefully somebody can call in. When you are in a position to change the lives of kids, the only thing I could ask you is this a job or is it your calling? And if it's your calling, you respond differently. If it's your job, you respond differently. So the listeners out there, whether it's one, whether it's a million, you're listening to somebody who's on a calling. And when somebody's on a calling, whether, you understand what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
And that's where we need to be. And that's what it's going to take to make a hard pivot in education. I need some folks on a calling. I need some folks on a mission. I need some folks that take the Hippocratic oath, right, of education. I don't care who comes in the building. I don't care who comes in the school. We're going to educate all of these damn kids, period. I don't know, Don. That's it. I don't know.
Okay. With that said, I would like to invite folks to call in this morning. When we talk, Mr. Sims, when we talk about topics like this that are serious, some people are hesitant to call in. I asked a young lady on Facebook just now, Ms. Pringle, who's definitely active in education, to call in. Ms. Pringle, that number, our call-in number for anybody, though, is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. You're listening to the Ron and Don Show. Mr. Edward is on special assignment this morning, and I have my guest co-host, Mr. Marvin Sims this morning, an educator in Minnesota, and we are talking about the state of education in Minnesota and what we need to do to make things better or start to make things better. Let's get back on point. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. The Minnesota Education Code's mission statement, Mr. Sims, states the following. This is 128.3 mission statement. The mission of public education in Minnesota, a system for lifelong learning, is to ensure individual academic achievement, an informed citizenry, and a highly productive workforce. This system focuses on the learner, promotes and values diversity, provides participatory decision-making, ensures accountability, models democratic principles, creates and sustains a climate for change. Personalized learning environment encourages learners to reach their maximum potential and integrates and coordinates human services for learners. The public schools of the state shall serve the needs of the students by cooperating with the parents and legal guardians to develop the students' intellectual capabilities and lifelong life work skills in a safe and positive environment. It is part of the department's mission that within the department resources, the commissioner shall endeavor to do, and I'm going to list the following. One, prevent the waste of unnecessary spending of public money. Two, to use innovative financial and human resources practice to manage the state's resources and operate the department as efficiently as possible. Three, coordinate the department's activity wherever appropriate with the activities of other government agencies. Use technology where appropriate to increase agency productivity. Now, these lists, it goes on to seven. I'm not going to read them all because some of them don't make any sense. But when you read that, when you hear that, what the mission statement is, the education code of the Minnesota Department of Education. Does it sound like we're doing that, Mr. Sims?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
Absolutely
now,
not.
That, okay. The Minnesota Education Code is broken down into several sections. It's broken down into elementary school, independent district, kindergarten, middle school, school district tax, secondary school, special district, superintendent, and vocational. And it has a school attendance session. It has compulsory instruction, children under seven, education records, and it has all these different pieces. The thing is, you know that Justice Alan Page and the chair of the Fed, the Minneapolis Federal Reserve, have gotten together and decided that, hey, we want to make a constitutional amendment to make education a civil right to close the gap. And as I stated to you several times, Mr. Sims, that will not close the gap, period. What are your thoughts about that? Justice Alan Page and the head of the Minnesota Federal Reserve, the Feds, with this amendment to close the gap, based on what I just read, based on the challenges of the rule of law, the statutes, the Minnesota statutes, will another constitutional amendment, a constitutional piece in the Minnesota Constitution, close the gap? In your opinion,
okay. I want to use so when I say us, I'm talking about black folk, black
okay.
people, black and brown people. How does decisions get made without black and brown voices? How do people make decisions about us, black and brown, without us? I want to make that clear, because every urban school, even suburban schools that I go to, I see nothing but black and brown faces. Another Google lookup, please, if you're out there. Just look at the U.S. Census demographic data, 2040, 20 years from now. America is now black and brown. We will be the majority. How do we compete as a country if majority of our black and brown kids are struggling? You can't go to the grocery store. You can't go downtown. You can't take your wife out for a date without people around you struggling. When are we going to wake up? Just Google it, 2040, U.S. Census, black and brown. Just Google it. We're sitting here right now at a turning point in our country. When we can get this right, or we can wait 20 years and watch what happens. So you're not safe in L.A., you're not safe in Minnesota, you're not safe in Texas, you're not safe in D.C., you're not, because we're all out here. And that's one thing. Look at the Global Peace Index. I don't know if people understand that. Look at the Global Peace Index, meaning that we're talking about in the world, jobs, quality of life, Global Peace Index. You know where the United States ranks, Don? We're 128th. Google that. Global Peace Index. We're 128th. We used to be 95. We're dropping, Don. We're dropping. I just say all of that so for folks to and this is what I said, this is my tagline as a dean of students about 10 years ago. I got in front of the parents and I said, hey, I miss, you know, Mr. Sims, my alphabet was LAS to OF. I had about 320 kids. I told the parents, I got young kids myself. When you drop your kid off at school, you will never have to cross your fingers and wonder if your kid is going to be okay. Because as soon as you drop them off, it turns into mine. And when I talk with parents all the time, I ask them, can I have the license? They're like, what's the license? The license to treat your kid like they were mine. Like they, so what are we getting at again? When teachers see kids, do they see their son or their daughter? When administrators see kids, do they see their son or their daughter? You respond differently when you see your son or your daughter. You raise them. It takes a village. I'm done with all this other stuff, Dom, but if we're not doing that on that level, then what you see is something different. So I'd like to look at someone or some school and their suspension rate, and the question I would ask, do you see your son or your daughter? I'd like to look at how kids respond academically. Do you see your son or your daughter? I'd like to ask kids, do they see, right, these caregivers as their fathers or mothers, right? You will find a different response, a different outcome. If half the babies, excuse me, that I talk with, they don't like me. They don't see me. They don't respect me. That's what's going on right now. So we can cut through all the BS, Don, and all I'm saying is I can ask these educators, do you see them? And you know what's crazy about that is simply this, and this is code. This is black and brown folk. I'm going to tell y'all this is code. I cannot walk in the streets anywhere. I would be in New York. If I see another black man, the first thing that I'm going to do is look him in the eye and maybe nod my head. And if I nod my head and I look him in the eye, the only thing I'm saying is I see you. So maybe the question needs to be, 2020, do we see our kids? Do we see them? Do we see these kids? Do we see their future? Do we see what they can become? Enough is enough. Why are we playing games? That's it.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right.
Why are we playing games?
So, you know what? I looked at this. This is very interesting what you're saying, Mr. Sims. Again, I'm on live with Mr. Marvin Sims, an educator here in the state of Minnesota, dean of students, special ed teacher, qualified. He's been around the United States looking at schools with black boys and girls that are successful, going to Yale, Harvard, Stanford, all over the place. And his question and his concern, as all of our concerns, is why aren't we doing it here in Minnesota? Based on the census, Mr. Sims, that I pulled it up here, I'm looking for the distribution of native and foreign-born populations by race from 2014 to 2060, native-born and foreign-born, while the black or minority increases 2060 by 50.6%. This is 18 and under. We're talking about school-age kids. The foreign-born population increases in the United States by 81.2%. So by 2040, we will have a majority of black and brown students. Now, the change in the population under 18 by race and Hispanic origin between 2014 and 2060, this is U.S. Census. This is a government document. The total population of black kids increases 94.7%. under 18. This is under 18. Two or more races increases 145.7%.
Mm-hmm.
So what you're saying is absolutely on point. And I don't understand why people aren't up in arms and paying a little bit more attention to this. Again, our number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. We're talking about education this morning. My special guest and co-host for today is Mr. Marvin Sims, an educator here in Minnesota, who's done it all and seen it all. And we are trying to get back on track and get the parents, get you, our listeners, to nudge someone next to you and say, hey, we really need to look at this. Now, let's get back into the Twin Cities. You know that we talked earlier. Everyone likes Justice Page and the Federal Reserve President Neil Kashkara, I think that's how you pronounce his name. They're interested into building a partnership with business and the private sector to make a right to education. I don't totally understand this, what they're trying to do, but based on the Minnesota Education Code and what we are supposed to do in Minnesota for education, it doesn't seem like we're adhering to the statutes and the rule of law, and there is no prima facie that says that it's necessary or a change in the statute is needed. So with that said, we know that Denise Speech, the Union of Education Minnesota, says that, you know, it's going to open the door for private sector tax vouchers for kids to go to other places. But Mr. Sims, we already know that if our black and brown boys and girls go to suburban schools, they don't do any better than they would, say, at a local school in Minneapolis or St. Paul. So what do you think, from your professional point of view and your experience, what do we need? And this is a big question, and it might have a lot of answers, and this is only an hour-long radio show. But what do we need to do to get back on track? I mean, I'm talking about the radical, not the triage, but I'm talking about the intensive open-heart surgery. What do you think, or what suggestions would you have to the people that are calling the shots right now to fix education in Minnesota?
I graduated 1997 with a degree in sociology because I was fascinated about the human mind. Got back up from Northern Iowa, got to Minnesota, came back home, and started coaching football. And the only way I could coach is if I was in the school. So then again, I go back. I'm a para in high school coaching high school football. And I remember my first day at class at my master's, getting my master's. I ended up getting my teacher's license at St. Cloud, but I got my master's. My first day up driving up to get my master's, I was crying. Because I was like, for the first time in my life, I had to use my mind. And who am I? No one in my family has gotten an advanced degree. What the heck do I think I'm doing? So all those things came into my mind. I say that in regard to how we change the system. The people who have benefited from the system cannot change it. You're great at school.
Hey.
You followed all right. You're in these communities. You go to college. The people look like you. You get your degrees. You teach. You move up the ranks. They can't change it. Don, I'm saying that because I never liked school. I love education. I never liked school. If we're trying to take a hard pivot, we have to look at the folks who this system has pushed aside. So if we're trying to talk about how we change this, I need to talk about those absent narratives. And I gave you a little bit of mine. I know principles, I know sister principles. I know a few teachers that never wanted to go into education. Somehow it found them. Education found me, Don. I love it. I can't get enough of it. But I am not your prototypical educator. You asked me in high school, teacher? Hell, heck no. You asked me in college? No. But I started to become, like I said, a para. Thank goodness I was with a master teacher. I didn't even know it. I started to figure out things, to figure out the system. Until this day, I don't even think I'm an educator. I'm in a different category. Matter of fact, let's talk. Paulo Freire, right? Pedagogy of the Oppressed. Let's go there. So now you're, and that's what I figured out. I figured out after years and years, wait a minute, some of these kids are being taught differently. Some of these kids are being treated differently. Some of these kids, right, have different opportunities. That's what we have going on in Minnesota right now. So for the folks out there, Google my name, I don't know, 2014, maybe 2010, Fox 9 Top Teacher of the Year. Google my name, Marvin Sims, Bush Fellow. Right. I'm not blowing smoke. I'm just saying that the stuff that I've learned, and the things that I've did, and the observations that I've seen over the years. We got two different Americas in here. So, and I'm gonna say this: we got two different Americas. In our schools, we got two different Americas in the way that we live, how we're treated. You go down the line. Dominant culture, the majority, we're talking about white, right? They live a different life. So now we're trying to wall all of that off when our kids come into our schools. It's a microcosm of society. You got racism out there? Yeah, it's in the schools. Everything is in our schools. And we're trying to treat it as if it's sterile. Like, not in these places. It's in these places.
Yes, it is. So we have a caller.
Go ahead.
No, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Underscore that. We're sitting around with the greatest resource, and these are our kids. This is the future of our country. We're sitting around and we're playing games, and we're choosing. Matter of fact, and I gotta say that we're choosing who is successful and who is not, and I want to underscore that, because a true meritocracy cannot have predictable outcomes. And right now, I can go to school, I can go anywhere. I can go anywhere and predict based on where the kids come from and what they look like, what the outcome is. A true meritocracy cannot have predictable outcomes.
Whoa,
so the game right now is rigged. The game right now is rigged. And guess whose favor it's in, period.
Okay, we have a caller. Our producers tell me that this is a friend of the show, Mr. M. Mr. M, you're live on the air with Don Allen and Mr. Marvin Sims. What's happening?
Well, not too much. Thank you. What's nothing going on but trying to stay warm, debating going out here what I'm going to do with the snow out here. But You know, I really enjoy this conversation on schools. As I've grown up here in Minneapolis and attended Minneapolis schools, my family did. But I think as your guest has said, I mean, here in Minneapolis, I mean, they have run a game on us here in South Minneapolis for sure, and really in Minneapolis in general. They've pretty much, and they've used our people to actually do it. I mean, when you go back to this closing of schools, I mean, growing up here, you know, everywhere I lived in Minneapolis, we lived across the street from a school. Every place we lived in, we lived across the street from the school. Now, at first, I was across the street from Phillip, and, of course, it was the years before I could go to Phillip. But there was always a school presence where I lived. And so once you take that away, you know, from people, everybody in the city has different economic means and what have you. But if you can walk to school, there's no excuse to not going there. If you can get there, if it's in walking distance, and this is what they've taken away. And like I say, it's our people that do it. I mean, Minneapolis Central, you know, and years ago, well, not too far away, there was a city council person that wanted to tear down North High School and said, actually, put in the paper, let's just burn it down. Just burn it down. That's the way you did it.
I remember that. That was Councilman Don Samuels. Yes. Go ahead.
And so, fortunately, the community was able to fight back. I mean, there was overtures of closing St. Paul Central, but the community fought back, and they made a compromise where they remodeled it instead of tearing it down, which they could have done at Minneapolis Central. But I guess my overall point is, you know, growing up, schools were sprinkled all around the community, and so many things have happened to keep pushing us to the side. I mean, even these freeways that come through our cities. I mean, they took away a lot of schools, a lot of neighborhoods, but the powers that be don't take the tax money and their wherewithal to make adjustments. I mean, there still should be a Central High School. There still should be a school that kids can walk to. But one thing that's really missing that I see as an observer, again, I went to Minneapolis schools, went to Washburn, to Mankato, left there with a master's degree at 23. My sister graduated from Central's PhD, Harvard. Columbia. My other brother, 30-year teachers at Minneapolis schools and coach. But we all went to Minneapolis schools that we could get to. And so when you take that away, you know, you're taking the access away. And it's very, very, very difficult to get through that. I mean, our powers that be, we see what's going on. We keep saying disparities. You know, there was almost a funny article in today's Minneapolis Star and Tribune. I don't know. I think, Mr. Allen, you may read that paper more than I do. But the first, the headline says, minorities sent to solitary confinement more often. I look at this and I say, tell me something I don't know. I mean, who wouldn't know that more blacks and Indian inmates face disproportionately higher rates in confinement and in jail, period? I mean, these are things that are, you know, these disparities, it continues to come out, it's there, but when are we going to do something about it? And just one more point, you know, Central in the city schools, is there were teachers in those schools that nurtured you. There were teachers, I mean, Coach Bowman, Coach Robinson, Joyce Jackson, the principal, who really guided that school. And when they closed the school, a lot of people don't know, they wanted to send her to South, and she quit. She said, you're going to close my school, I quit. And she just left. But there were people in those schools that were community-oriented to watch out for everyone. It was a real, real community, and they've systematically, I mean, ruined it, and it's been really a big part of our demise. And that's, you know, just an opinion, from humble opinion from South Minneapolis.
Okay, stand by, Mr. Sims. Any reflection on what our caller, Mr. M, has talked about?
Did you? I was listening to Mr. M very closely. What I heard, community. They cared about us. The principal said, I'd rather leave, right? If I can't do what I need to do. right? And I just say that because that's where I'm from. I'm from a community that we look out for each other. I'm from a community that we love and care for each other. I'm from a community that if you don't make it, I don't make it. Please hear me. That's what we are about. I don't know, Brother M. I was just listening to figure out where he comes from. He's talking the same language I'm talking.
Yes, sir.
When can we realize? And another just data point. If people can Google Malcolm Gladwell, revisionist, I think it's revisionist history, he talks about the Brown versus Board of Education, the decision. The decision was never based on whether white schools were better than black. He interviewed people. He interviewed families. Here's what they said about black schools. They cared for us. They loved us. They treated us like we're family. Don, what did I say earlier? It's the same thing. When are we going to get back to, do you see that kid as your son or your daughter? I said that. You got me on tape. When are we going back to that? That's what Brother M was talking about. So I just want to underscore this. Is it your job? Is it a calling? Because you respond differently. And I just say the majority of folks that I know of color out here really doing this work for real, treat it as a calling. But I just got to give my mother, my grandmother, respect because I didn't get this. It was taught to me. So I bring that into my profession. That's it. So I don't know if folks can understand that, but when I see those kids in Humboldt or Minneapolis, if I'm out there speaking, trying to motivate these kids, I look at myself because I see them in me. I look at my brother or my sister, right, or family, put it that way, and I don't know. Here's the remedy, and I just want to say this. The remedy is simply this. How do we have people in front of these kids, our most precious commodity? And here's the thing. I'm coming in with love. That's it, and that might be ambiguous. What is he talking about? But I'm gonna tell you something. You love someone. You treat them differently, right? You love someone. You see them differently. And right now, all I would say is, and I tell the kids, I don't know. Doctor, lawyer, politician, school teacher. I don't know. My job is to pull it out. That's what education should be right now. We don't know. What do you want to become? I don't know. But I got to pull it out. And right now, what we're doing is sorting and measuring. You look like what? Okay, this is where you go. You come from what? This is where you're going to go. And again, I go back to a true meritocracy should not have predictable outcomes. And right now, based on what you look like, where you come from, and how much money your family makes, game over.
Yeah, you know, this is Tim again. You know, that is such a great point because again, with our community schools, and I have to go back, you know, to a comment Mr. Allen said earlier. You know, you're not going to have, you know, we have people that went to Yale, Harvard, Stanford, and all of those type schools. I can tell you names of people that graduated from Minneapolis Central that went to those schools and graduated, that lived right in the neighborhood and walked to that school every day. And so when they take those kinds of, to me, when they take those kinds of things away from us, it's like it's got to be on purpose. When you see success, why do you want to tear down success? Wouldn't you want to enhance that? Wouldn't you want to make that better? But no, you want to tear it down. So there's a reason, and I don't want to, you know, people say M could be a conspirator, and what did Mr. Edwards say, something about toxicity, which I don't know if that's even a word, but I really think that if we have community schools where the parents and everybody has to be kept on, as Don Allen would say, on point to be part of their kids' education.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's made so difficult when I saw the other side through the child protection area where, you know, housing is so difficult to get, you know, one-bedroom apartments, thousands of dollars. You can't get Section 8. The women can't have a man there. They can't work. They can't. And all of these things are kind of a cumulative effect on our communities and on our kids and their access to education. We've made access to everything pay. It used to be great to have access, schools, clinics. Now access costs. Now to watch TV costs. You used to have to turn on the TV, you didn't have any station, but you didn't talk about paying nobody to watch it. Now everything costs. And now, and this gets us caught up in that spiral that against resources, against community, and it's my only thing is I think the community just has to band together and say what we want. And I think that's the only way. One voice is pretty limited in this valley, but more voices,
mm-hmm.
More voices is what we need.
So let me ask both of you gentlemen, since I have you on here, M, and Marvin. M is a friend of the show. He's had experience with child protection and some of the significant fails in that system that he talked about here on this show. So it's Monday morning, Martin Luther King Day. Okay, people are going to be out in there dressed to the nines, attending events. Some people are serving food to the homeless and the poor. But we get to Tuesday. And we'll start with you, Mr. Sims, and then we'll let M comment afterwards. What should parents do Tuesday morning? What should our parents do to these public that have children in the public schools? Where do they start? What should they do Tuesday morning next week? Go.
A history lesson. One history lesson about a person. I'm just going to say a person, right? That stood for something. So I know people that I work with, black and white, but I just want to highlight this. I want to say a person, right? This educator, and he's been doing this for years. But he goes downtown, St. Paul, Minneapolis, and he buys homeless people a meal.
Okay.
I just want to start out with the floor. The floor. We're not talking about the ceiling, right? As we start looking at what he meant to the world, and you can name a thousand other people that had the same, closely the same heart. I want to say a thousand. I'm gonna pivot to Nelson Mandela, aka MLK. I gotta go back to this. and maybe this is where I needed to start. If I take away your humanity, I rob myself of mine. If I take away your humanity, I rob myself of mine. And I want to get back to, again, the fact that we got people who have to realize, again, M.U. out there listening, we're not too far away. This is what scares me. We're not too far away from white drinking fountains from colored. We're not too far away from Brother M. Pick up your lunch from the back. We're not too far away from Little Rock Nine. We're not too far away. We're a stone's throw away from going back. And if people don't understand that, how do you appreciate what's going on Monday?
Yeah.
What's going on? If you understand, come on. I'm 45. My mother went to segregated schools. She's from here. She remembers that. And if we don't take an honest reflection of what has gone before us, how do we move forward?
Well, I know time's going to be up. This is M. Can I say a few things before we go?
Yeah.
Well, you know, our history with these kind of things is they put us in these holes over time. But we as a people have always been able to make it with a little. You know, I could hear my grandfather say, well, it took two jobs to make one good one. And so...
Sorry about that.
M, you there?
What happened?
We just have the switchboard cut off. I'm sorry about that. No, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. It's like I said, we always have been able to rise up. And so when it gets down like this, this is when we kind of have to regroup. I mean, that's my only comeback to it. I mean, my mom grew up in Birmingham, Alabama. Her mom grew up in Talladega, and they shouldn't even go to school. Her grandmother, they had a school that burned down, and then it was so far to walk, they just stayed home and worked. They didn't have any opportunities. But at Parker High School in Birmingham, that was the biggest black school in history, black people. You had Willie Mays. You had great athletes. You had all these things. When we come together, we can do it. And I think they know that, and that's why it continues to be dissipated, and we have to continue to stand up. And until we do that, you know, we have to do it. And then we have to bring people in, because when we show that we're for real and that we mean this, that we want for our communities, we have to have a plan. And that's kind of my overall thing. We're always going to have
to be. All right, thank you. We have less than a minute left in the show. I'd like to thank Mr. Marvin Sims and him for wrapping up the last 10 minutes of the show. We'll be back next week on the Ron and Don show. This is a very interesting with 1 minute left, actually, we invite you tomorrow to tune in to KMOJ Radio at 1 p.m. for Community Conversations with Al Flowers and Lisa Clemens. I'll actually be on that show, so you guys can tune in tomorrow at 1 p.m. on KMOJ. I'd like to thank Mr. Marvin Sims and also you, M, for chiming in, and we'll be back next week with Mr. Edwards. And we'll let James Brown, again, take us away. Thank you.